The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball. Raised in front of a computer screen. Raised for covering the game. Raised by Wolves. Now talking all things Timberwolves with beat writer Derek James. Here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
That is strong. Like, I'm serious. He hit me with one screen today, and I thought my life was over. Like, seriously. He's like from Krypton or something. Seriously. He's strong. Like, all right, I'm going to call him and hit another set of screen on you. That's bad.
Don't you just love Jimmy Butler?
Jimmy Butler is a treasure, and I am ready to go to battle over his all-star campaign because the second round just came out, and he's a 9.
Yeah,
he should be an all-star just because of his post-game quotes alone. That's even before mentioning his fantastic play.
Yeah. We are the Raised by Wolves podcast. That was Jimmy Butler in the locker room after the Wolves win over Oklahoma City on Wednesday night. 104-88 was the final at Target Center. And, of course, he was referring to Steven Adams, saying that he's strong, obviously. And Steven Adams is pretty strong.
You know, though, if you have, 17 brothers and sisters, and that's not hyperbole or an exaggeration or anything.
Right.
I think you have to be tough and strong. Otherwise, you're going to get eaten by the rest of the pack. I think that's how that works.
Exactly, yeah. We are brought to you by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. By the way, I am Manny Hill. That is the voice of Derek James. We're in different locations right now in case people can't figure it out. We usually tape this together in the same studio, but with the weather being kind of what it is, I figure and might as well just do this
We're
via the internet.
We're respectively snowed in right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I probably could have made it, but it wasn't really worth it.
Right, right. So the Wolves get the win over Oklahoma City. They're 27-16 as of this taping. And, of course, they're going to take on the Knicks Friday. And, I mean, they're playing some good basketball right now. I think, what are they, 10 and, or no, they've won 13 of 18. Because they were 14-11 mm-hmm. at one point, and so they're 13-5 in their last 18 games, and they're playing some good ball. It's hard to really find a real major complaint right now with how this team is playing.
Well, you know, like the great thing right now is they managed to get within a game and a half of the Spurs for third in the conference.
Yeah,
which is always helpful, and they've kind of carved this nice little spot for themselves where they're now looking at it 3.5 games between the Wolves and the Blazers for between fourth and fifth in the Western Conference standings. And they already in the last week have gotten the tiebreaker over the Pelicans and now the Thunder. And how weird is this schedule where they've already played the Thunder 4 times now? But yeah, they're just playing incredibly. And at home, they're one of the best teams in the NBA. And you look at it, I mean, there's almost a direct correlation between the best teams in the league record-wise and their records at home. If you want to win and be one of the best teams in the league, you have to take care of business at home. And they are 16-6 at home, 11-10 on the road. So they're playing pretty well just about everywhere else. But, I mean, if they start picking up a few more wins against the Eastern Conference teams just to really boost that record, they'll be even better off. But, yeah, it's hard to complain with what we've seen so far.
And it's amazing, too, because you remember last week, they lose the game at Brooklyn. And, you know, I remember you and I were talking about just kind of talking about the last shot that Jimmy took. And we were just kind of like, I don't know if that was the best look. And just, you know, all the three-pointers Brooklyn made and the Wolves only made one. And Brooklyn had made more threes than the Wolves attempted that game. And so it was just kind of like, it was just kind of an icky loss. You know, it was just kind of gross. And then we were looking ahead at these next few games, and we were thinking, okay, to Boston, Cleveland, you know, another one with Oklahoma City, this is going to be a tough stretch. And they came out of the last three games winning 2 out of 3, just losing the one in Boston.
Hold on, and they didn't just win 2 out of 3.
Right.
They stomped the life out of the Pelicans and the Cavaliers.
Yeah, yeah. And then of course, they get the win last night, too, so it's been some impressive basketball over a tough stretch that, you know, I think a lot of people were looking at this is it could be a little bit troublesome with Cleveland coming into town. They just take care of the Cavs. Oklahoma City, they've kind of been neck and neck with them, and the last matchup with the Thunder didn't go so well. So
even then, they lost that game by like 4 points.
Yeah.
It was like 111-107.
Yeah. And so, and that was a game, too, that Cat didn't particularly have a very good game defensively. Steven Adams, I think, was, 12 for 12 or something at 27 points or something like that.
That was a weird stretch where, there were two games in a row where, DeAndre had a perfect field goal night, too, and Steven Adams did the night after or before, something like that. Yeah. But Cat was just getting burned anyway. And that's the thing, defensively, that's how they're doing this. And it's kind of cool to see. I think I looked last and they were up to 17th in the league, and they've held 7 straight opponents to under 100 points. And the last time, did you see this, Manny, the last time they did it?
Mm-mm.
It was 2008. I can't figure out for the life of me how an Al Jefferson-led team surrounded by Rashad McCants and Greg Buckner managed to do that, but they did.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's McCants and Al Jefferson. Was that Corey Brewer's rookie year, I think, too? 07-08?
It could have been.
I think so. I think it was. That was the first year. It was the first year after KG was traded, because the Celtics went and won the title that year.
Yeah, because 07 would have been, or is that 06? McCants was 05. Roy and Foy was 06, correct?
Yep. And then 07 was Corey
then Brewer. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Wow.
And anyway, to get back to what we were talking about, they have had since December 7th, they are 10th in defensive rating over that time. And that is over a 21-game stretch. So what we're seeing from this team, this is no longer a small sample. This team is coming together on the defensive end, and that's really making a difference. Even in the games they lose, they're not getting blown out. And now I think they're the third-best team in point differential. So the offense is humming. The defense is coming together. This is really looking like a good trend upwards for the Timberwolves.
Well, what is it, 6 or 7 straight games now of holding opponents under 100 points?
Yeah, 7.
Yeah, I think that it was the Bucks game that was last time an opponent got 100, over 100 points, I think.
And didn't they get 101 or something?
Yeah, it was 102, I think, yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, but so we're seeing improvements defensively. I think Towns has made huge leaps and bounds defensively in the last few weeks. I think even Wiggins has shown some improvement on that end. We know how good Jimmy and Taj are on that end of the floor. And let's not forget, too, Derek, they've been doing this. We got Jeff Teague back. We saw Jeff Teague for the first time in a couple of weeks last night against Oklahoma City. So they were doing this without, with one of their starters out. And Tyus, of course, filled in and did a nice job filling in as a starter, and I was a little worried when they announced that Jeff Teague was going to start the game. Mm-hmm. I was thinking, man, okay, does this mean he's going to get 38 minutes and Tyus is going to get 10, what we've been kind of seeing? Or is
Tyus
it
played
more?
Almost 20, I think. 18.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. And Teague actually only ended up playing 26 minutes, I think. So now how that's going to sort of evolve over the next few games as Teague gets more, acclimated to being back and shaking some of the rust from the last couple of weeks. I don't know. We'll see. I would like to see Tyus continue to get more minutes and continue to get, 19, 20, 21 minutes a night. At this point, I don't see any reason why you can't play him that many minutes. He's played pretty good defense. He's been a steady, ball distributor. He's made some shots when you've needed him to. I don't see any reason why he should have to go back to, 11, 12 minutes just because Jeff Teague is back in the lineup.
No, I don't think so either. And I think you need to keep him on the court one way or the other, whether you get a little weird with it and you experiment with lineups with both of them on the floor at the same time for a few minutes. I just think, Tom Thibodeau said this too multiple times, that the more pick and roll players that you have on the floor at the same time, especially in today's NBA, makes you all the more dangerous. And Tyus Jones is certainly capable of that. And it's not like you're going to go with that for extended times. So it's not going to kill you that much. And of course, you only put it out there in the right times. But it's not a terrible idea, and also it really gives you the chance to ease Jeff Teague in. But yeah, there's I don't know how they could feel good about putting Tyus back to 12 minutes per game when he's played so well with starters' minutes.
Yeah, he's played too well to just, you know, reduce, you know, cut his minutes in half, essentially. I mean, he's played too well for that.
And I've seen it, people saying, oh, well, Teague should start, but they won't do it. It's like, well, of course, you're not going to pay your backup $27 million a year. Like, nobody's going to do that.
Yeah. We did put out a flyer for some questions from our listeners, and we always appreciate that. We got a few of them. We got, I think, 6 or 7 questions, so we'll sort of run through those right now. Eric Wong tweets at us, will we ever see Anthony Brown play at Target Center this season? Now, Anthony Brown is on a two-way contract, and there are some, I think there's some restrictions to, like, how many days he can be on the roster or something like that. Is there some, what's the deal with the two-way contracts?
Oh, you know what? I honestly am not sure on that. I think I knew, and then I forgot because I had not had to think about it that much. But I do think there is some limitation, and they do want to make sure that they don't jeopardize any potential roster flexibility. So I would think, and as long as there isn't any deadline on being able to call guys up, I would think they'd have to wait. They'd want to wait till after the trade deadline or something like that to make sure they keep that flexibility.
What do you know about Anthony Brown? Because I know he spent some time, was it with the Lakers that he was with?
Yeah, he was a Laker, and I think somewhere else. He played all right, too. I think he was a better shooter in college, and that didn't translate if I'm thinking of the right player.
Because he went to Stanford, I know that. I know he played at Stanford.
He was in New Orleans, too. I thought I remember that right. Played also parts of last year with Orlando.
Orlando, too, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Couldn't really find a shot. He's played about 40 NBA games, so over two years. Yeah, 2 years. Was actually a 5-year guy at Stanford. I'm guessing he redshirted his junior year. I don't know. Maybe medical redshirt or something.
Okay.
But, yeah, he was a solid shooter. He got better every year. Finished his career at Stanford as shooting over 40% from three and decent rebounder as a senior. He had 7 rebounds a game. Now, when you're 22 years old going against 19-year-olds, it's probably really easy to jump over guys for rebounds and all that.
Yeah.
Solid playmaker, 2.5 assists a game his senior year. So really strong finish. Probably a little older guy at this point. Mm-hmm. And he's not really like a raw prospect, but yeah, I mean, it seems to be like he'd be a good guy to get a look at some point if they can find a good time to work him in. And hopefully, you know, they would actually have a choice in it, not like, we need a body, hurry up and please be good.
Jimmy Buck tweets at us, at what point do we allow ourselves to think this run isn't a fluke? I think right now.
Yeah. Oh, totally. This team is good.
Yeah. They're good. I mean, we expected them to be good, right? Like, going into this season, we expected them to be, you know, a playoff team and to be, you know, to be in that mix and not to be struggling to, you know, down to the last week of the season to get into the 8th playoff spot. We figured, yeah, they'd be somewhere in that 4 to 7 range, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, what we expected. I think we figured the 4th was the ceiling for this team, and I think a lot of us nailed it exactly. They weren't in the Warriors, Rockets, Spurs tier. We knew that, and that's what's played out. And they've really separated themselves, and they've gotten better, I think, every single week. Even, you know, when it seemed ugly and they've been winning games, they still haven't lost more than 2 in a row. I mean, they've played good basketball all year long. I think their longest losing streak is actually 2, and they've done it twice, if I recall correctly. And they're beating, not just beating good teams lately, they're pummeling them, and they're doing it, you know, with defense, which is something that was missing before, where they were hoping to score 125 points because they were going to give up 120. And now they don't have to do that anymore. They are actually able to hold teams down to where the offense doesn't need to work as hard. So, yeah, the offense is down a little bit, but the defense has come up so much that it doesn't matter. And I think that energy is kind of transferring a little bit from the offensive end and completing, rounding out the defense. And I think guys like Towns, you know, improving on defense as well, you know, is helping out. Tom Thibodeau, I think, digging deeper into the bench has helped and keeping guys fresher, so you don't have situations like Taj Gibson sucking wind at the end of the third quarter, you know, things like that. So I think now it's, I don't, to me, it's not a question of if they're going to make the playoffs or when they're going to backslide. I think this team is for real. And I do think that, you know, they do want to make sure that they take care of business and they, you know, lock up home court, because that's going to be very important to them as to whether or not they can win a series. But I think that's where the conversation is with this team is, you know, how far can they go? Not just can they finally get in?
Yeah, and I think if you look at the standings right now, I mean, they're what, as of this taping, they're what, a game and a half behind San Antonio? Now, San Antonio obviously has the history and the pedigree, and, you know, you've got Pop and you've got, you know, Kawhi and you've got LaMarcus Aldridge and all that. But Kawhi has not been quite the factor that, you know, he has been just because of injuries and whatnot, and he's injured again. So, I mean, there is that small possibility that you could, you know, if you could sort of continue this strong play and, you know, maybe the Spurs lose a couple games in a row, you could potentially leapfrog them into that three spot. And then now you're talking about, you know, if you can find a way to get that three seed, now you're talking about potentially winning a first-round series and not having to deal with Golden State in the second round if the Warriors, of course,
yep,
hold on to things and not fall out of that top spot. So, I mean, maybe you win if you get yourself into that three spot, you get maybe a more favorable matchup with Houston in the second round if you win your first-round series. We haven't seen them play Houston yet, so we don't really know exactly how they would match up with a team like the Rockets. I mean, I'm foreshadowing a lot of things here. I'm getting, you know, way ahead of myself here, but there is that possibility. I mean, it's not like the Spurs, historically, the Spurs have been better, but it's not like the Spurs are out of reach in the standings right now.
Well, let's play a quick fun little game here. So right now, the 5-8 teams are separated by a game and a half. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think the Wolves really fear the Thunder after the way that they've handled them all year long?
Not at all.
The Nuggets? Do the Nuggets scare you?
No. And the Nuggets are still dealing with, I mean, they're dealing with injuries now, and they've been, you know, they've been without Paul Millsap for what, about a month and a half, 2 months now?
They won't get him back till sometime in March, I think, around March.
So you got to figure they're going to probably be kind of laboring while he's out and while they're waiting for him to get back into things. So who knows where Denver is going to finish in the standings, you know?
Well, even the Pelicans, the Blazers. I think the Blazers are the team that you don't really want, just because you don't want Dame or CJ getting hot for a few games.
Right.
And going to Portland is a tough place to play. So I think of those teams, that's the one that I would not want in the first round. And that would be a nice benefit of, you know, getting that third seed. So you avoid Portland. But Portland right now is in the fifth spot, but they're only half a game ahead of the Thunder. And I think the Thunder are a very flawed team. The Pelicans are, you know, a flawed team. The Nuggets, you know, there just might not be enough there, period, for them to be too much of a factor.
Right. Clay asks us, does Justin Patton fit on this year's team anywhere, or is he better off in the G League for the remainder of the season? That's an interesting one.
I actually thought about this. And yeah. I'm kind of torn.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, because you could play him in a couple different spots. So you have Gorgui behind Taj and Towns, and you have Bielitsa there, but Bielitsa's been bad.
Yep.
Patton really just gives you, you know, an extra body, a bigger guy with some range and, you know, some ball handling skills. You know, whether how much that translates to the NBA, we don't really know yet. But I do think there's some value in trying to see if that type of player can fit in there rather than, you know, just having him in the G League and, you know, never really knowing and missing a potential opportunity. But for his skill set, yeah, I do think that, you know, from what we've seen in Iowa, that there are things he does that could help this team. But, I mean, he'll have to work for it. I mean, and being a rookie with a coach like Tom Thibodeau, I don't feel it's an easy thing and you're really going to have to work your way in. But Bielitsa has played not very well since he's come back from injury. So if he's going to fit in somewhere, I think there are minutes there. And Gorgui can play either front court position, I think, especially in a backup role. I don't think that's a big deal. See, I think there's a place for him.
Yeah, I think it really just comes down to Tom Thibodeau, right? If Tom Thibodeau has, if Tom Thibodeau trusts him to put him in, to give him a fairly significant role in the rotation, or if he just, if they call him up and he is just on the roster and he gets a lot of DMPs, but he's with the team and he's practicing and, he's learning that way. I guess it just kind of depends on how much Tom Thibodeau trusts him, but they drafted him. I mean, he was part of the trade for Jimmy, but the Wolves made that selection with the 16th pick. So obviously they saw something in him that they like.
Right. They want him. And yeah, he's a Tom Thibodeau guy, and coaches, usually have a great sense of pride in there, and they're really not willing to cut bait that early on a guy. And, there's a lot of pride involved. That's why I was surprised when Tom Thibodeau traded Chris Dunn. He was his first ever draft pick, and it was surprising to see him go so quickly, but, how much more he loved Jimmy Butler. I don't know if there's anything he loves more than Jimmy Butler. I could see it.
Yeah. How about Chris Dunn, by the way? Isn't it kind of cool seeing him play well? Because, I was worried about him last year because there were times where, he would be essentially, the backup point guard or sort of that third point guard, and he would struggle at times. And you just wonder, man, I don't know if that role is for him. But he showed some signs of getting better. The shot is still a little bit, shaky at times, but he showed some nice improvement for Chicago.
It's getting to be at a level that you can accept. I mean, he's playing well in Chicago, and, good for him. And people are like, oh, well, should they have traded Chris Dunn? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I will trade Chris Dunn for Jimmy Butler any day of the week. And I think a lot of people got to remember is that he was not going to get this opportunity
right
up here. There was just no way. I mean, if it was behind Wiggins or LaVine or Jimmy or behind Jeff Teague, minutes were going to be tight for him anyway, and he wasn't going to get the same opportunity and the same chances to start that he's seen in Chicago. And that's what guys need sometimes, is just more opportunity to make mistakes and grow, and, also to find the right coaching system. It's not that Tom Thibodeau didn't appreciate him. He openly raved about Chris Dunn's defense over and over again and lamented whenever Dunn could not play because he was their best perimeter defender last season, and he was a rookie. So, I mean, Tom Thibodeau, really, I think it was a hard decision to trade him.
Matt asks, if the Wolves make a move at the trade deadline, what position or player could you see them wanting to add? Well, we kind of talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I brought up the idea of Damari Carroll. Now, I don't think you're going to be able to trade a Gorgui Dieng for Damari Carroll now, because
should you even do that?
Well, at this point, I don't know if you really should. But I mean, I do think that some sort of defensive wing is something that I think that they're really kind of missing right now. A guy that can come off the bench. I mean, not somebody that's going to come in and start over Wiggins or Jimmy or anything like that, but somebody that's going to give you, 14, 15 minutes of pretty good defense and can occasionally hit an outside shot, just for the sake of depth, because my concern still is, we get later into the season, as we get to, late February and into March, we get to the 60, 65, 70 game mark, that guys, you want guys to still be fresh for a potential playoff run.
Yeah, and I think you want to have a little more confidence in what you're going to get out of your bench on a night-to-night basis. I don't think that the bench is actually, bereft of talent or just bad.
Right.
I just think it's inconsistent, because there are some nights that it looks great, and or at least good, and they can, throw four guys at you off the bench, and they can give you 20 to 30 points on any given night. But then there are other nights where you might just get the Jamal Crawford show, or it might be Nemanja Bjelica hitting 3 3-pointers, and that's all that you get. So, but you never really know what it's going to be on any given night. I think that's kind of the cause for concern, because that really doesn't, that ties Tom Thibodeau's hands in having to play the starters more, which, we don't want.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely something new to watch in the next few weeks as we get, I mean, we're only about a month away from the trade deadline, too, so that's something to keep an eye out for. We'll have to have Doogie on here, too, in the next couple of weeks to see if he's
hearing any rumbles. I was just going to say that.
Yeah. Marty says, what's the team record defensive plus minus, et cetera, like since Shabazz was taken out of the rotation?
Okay, well, I didn't find exact defensive plus minus.
Okay.
But so defensive rating through November 29th, when he really was his last game in the rotation, to now, it was 107.5. Yep, 107.5 in 22 games. In the 21 games since then, perfect time to ask this question. It's down to 104.8. So just about 3 points worth. Okay. So 3 points per 100 possessions better, which is good. Net rating was just a 0.9 when he was still playing to 7.4. So this isn't going to be all Shabazz, and I think it's, you know, attributable to a number of things and players improving. But, you know, what is it? Nick Hagen tweeted something at us, too. It wasn't really a question, just an interesting thing.
Yeah.
And it was, let's see, I think Windshear's added. Yeah, wins added. Shabazz Muhammad's the worst on the team with 0.16, and he's barely played in a month and a half.
Oh, wow.
And defensive, plus, yeah, just one of the worst, you know, probably the worst player on the roster, you know, by the metrics that he's shown here and with wins added. So, yeah, it's there's a big difference in not playing Shabazz Muhammad. I mean, he's kind of come back in the last couple nights now.
Yeah, boy, you know, it's tough because, you know, Shabazz is, from all accounts, from, you know, from my observations from afar, seems like a pretty good dude, and he does play hard, you know, but it's been a struggle for him this year, and, you know, it's gotten to the point where he's just out of the rotation, and There's, you know, Tom Thibodeau just can't really trust him to really contribute at this point right now. And yeah, it's just tough. It's really tough. Mitchell asks, who is the ideal trade deadline candidate? We kind of had this question already, but he says, who is the ideal trade deadline candidate that would both fit the team's needs and be attainable without having to give up too many assets? Well, I guess if we're talking assets, touchable assets, right? Like, I mean, it's safe to say, like, you look at, like, Towns, Jimmy Butler, Andrew Wiggins. Those three guys especially are, like, the untouchable guys that you have.
Tom Thibodeau would rather lay down on First Avenue during rush hour than trade Jimmy Butler. So let's just take that one off the table.
Right, right. So in terms of, you know, assets that they would be willing to part with, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you would have to if you're going to get somebody that you think can significantly help you, you're going to have to give up something in return.
Whether it's Gorgie or the OKC pick or Cole Aldrich.
Right.
And that's the thing, like, how fast do you get to Cole Aldrich when you start listing out this team's assets? You get there a little too quick, I think.
Yeah. In terms of assets that you're willing, that you're willing to part with.
I mean, Tyus? I mean, if it's the right deal, do you think about it? I don't know. And, like, that's just an idea. I don't want to trade Tyus, but I mean, when you look at it, like, what are other teams going to want? You know, what could teams need? I think Tyus Jones is a lot more appealing than, I don't know, Aaron Brooks.
Right.
You know, I mean, you got to give something to get something. And I think that, you know, if you really want to improve this team, you have the chance to make that big move. I mean, these are the things they're going to be asking about. The Wolves don't really have a lot that they can do, especially since, you know, they're likely going to have to give up that pick to Atlanta this year.
Yeah, and, you know, and I'm looking at the Oklahoma City pick. I mean, at least based off of what we've seen from them, they look like they're going to make the playoffs, but it doesn't seem like they're going to have a very high seed when they make the playoffs. So you figure that It's the pick is lottery protected, right? So basically the only way you would not get that pick is if they miss the playoffs. So, I mean, if they finish just a few games over 500 and they're like a seventh seed in the West, yeah, that's you're probably looking at, what, the 17th or 18th pick in the draft? I mean, that's it's not a lottery pick, but that's something that you could turn into something that you could, you know, you could draft a guy that ends up helping you. I mean, Kyle Kuzma has been terrific as a rookie for the Lakers, and he was the 27th pick. Like, they got him, they got that pick to take him in the D'Angelo Russell trade from the Nets.
Or Jordan Bell, the pick the Bulls sold off.
Yeah.
Because they had 38 guys on their board with the 39th pick for some reason, which is just incredible.
Yeah, and let's sell that pick to the defending world champions too. By the way,
we only know 38 players, and we have the 39th pick. Better just sell it. We we couldn't pull up Chad Ford or something to get an idea. So I mean, these picks do matter. I mean, you might not find a superstar, but you can still find a player. I mean, every once in a while you find a Manu Ginobili or a Jimmy Butler or, you know, a Kyle Kuzma. But yeah, I mean, it's not nothing.
Yeah.
And it's something that a team could potentially get this year, that could likely get this year if they were to, you know, accept that in a deal. And I mean, I'd rather look back on this season and say, we could have had that piece that, you know, was able to give us the edge and to move them on to the next round rather than just, you know, grasp on to that first round pick. I don't know. It's a tough call, and I see arguments, you know, both ways for keeping it versus trading it.
Yeah, and I think it just ultimately, like, if you want to get something, like, I feel like if you're going to move it, then get something in return that you can at least have some team control over for, like, more than just, you know, something beyond this season. Like, if you're going to trade the pick for, like, a rental player that's going to walk in free agency this summer, then I guess I don't really see the point of giving up something like that.
That's one mistake this team has made, this franchise has made throughout its entire existence, is not treating, you know, the picks with the value that they do have. Because, I mean, you look at teams who are in similar cap situations, they need to hit on these picks. I mean, the Warriors don't, you know, exactly have bounds and bounds of cap space anymore with their roster, but they get guys like Jordan Bell, and they, you know, they control him on the cheap for years. And that's exactly what you need to do. You need to hit on these, you know, late lottery picks, or, you know, just the late, mid to late first round picks that these other teams don't, or even into the second round. I mean, really, all these picks do matter.
Gosh. How the Bulls sell that pick to the Warriors. Good grief. As if the Warriors, like, need more, like, breaks and more, like, cheap contributors off their bench and, you know, fortunate contract situation. Like, as if the Warriors need to have more of that. Like, it's just...
Those Warriors just don't get any breaks, do they?
Oh, goodness. All right, so thanks for the questions from everybody that submitted them. So looking ahead now of these next few games, I mean, you've got the Knicks. You know, you've got a big matchup with the Knicks. You know, they've been kind of an interesting team this year. And, you know, you've got the Trailblazers. And, you know, you got Orlando coming up. I mean, these are some games, and then you're finally going to get a look at the Rockets on the 18th. So these are some big games coming up for the Wolves, and what are you looking for? I mean, it just seems like just keep doing what you're doing, because they're defending well, they're scoring efficiently, and, you know, everybody that's playing is playing fairly well. Even Wiggins has picked up, you know, on the offensive end a little bit more. He was going through a stretch there where it was kind of tough, but his defense has gotten a little bit better. He's shooting a little bit better. You know, save for that Boston game last Friday. So it right now, it just kind of seems like they can just sort of continue to do what they've been doing the last handful of games, and it should be all right over the next couple of weeks.
Well, what I'm really looking for is a name for this Orlando-Houston road trip, something along the lines of the NASA or the Apollo road trip. But that's not really basketball related and just something that I think is fun and dumb and funny. But anyway, yeah, no, I don't think they need to change a whole lot. I think the Knicks game is pretty winnable. I think the Blazers game will be another good test. I think you do want to get another win on your under your belt against the Blazers before you go to Portland later on this month. That's going to be an important game. I think that's really probably of the next three, that's probably the biggest one on the schedule, in my opinion. The one this Sunday.
Yeah.
God, these 8 p.m. Sunday games. I mean, when did this become a thing?
Well, the Sunday game, the Portland game, that's because of, well, it helps because the Vikings have the playoff game against the Saints, and they're the 3:40 game.
That makes sense. Yeah, competing with the NFL is never really a good idea.
Right, exactly.
You're going to lose.
And since both games are going to be in town, I mean, it's probably a better idea to kind of keep them separated.
Well, it gives fans a chance to go from one to the other if they so choose.
Yeah.
And then, to Orlando, to Houston. What I think is going to be interesting is that West Coast trip the week of the 22nd, where they go to Los Angeles to play the Clippers and then to Portland and Golden State. That West Coast trip is always difficult, it seems like, every single year. So I think that'll be another good challenge for the team. And then it kind of softens up after that, hosting the Nets and then going to Atlanta. And then they go to Toronto from Atlanta. Like, who put that together?
The Wolves have had kind of a weird... They've had kind of a weird schedule. Some of their back-to-backs have been a little bit odd, where they would play a home game and then they would have a back-to-back after that, but it'd be like a road game somewhere. And I don't know. It's been kind of a weird schedule this year for them. But one thing I'm looking for is just how they continue to play against the division. They've done very well against the division. We know that, winning a division in the NBA is not like winning the division in baseball or in the NFL or anything like that. You just get kind of a cool banner, I guess. But I think because when you look at this particular division and you have all four of the other teams in the division are all trying to get into the playoffs. You know, even Utah's kind of struggled this year, but they're only a couple games out of that eighth spot.
They're a good run away from being back in the mix.
Exactly. And so, you got Portland that's kind of hanging around behind you. Oklahoma City's still there. Denver's still kind of hanging around. And the Wolves have done well against them this year as a whole. So I think, these next couple games against the Blazers, whether it's here on Sunday and then in Portland in a couple weeks, those are going to be some games to watch too, because if you can just continue to do well in your division – and gain some space and some separation from them, it's going to make things even easier for you to kind of hang around in the spot in the Western Conference that you're sitting in. So I think I think these division games are going to be big, and then you've got some other points. That Rockets game, man, on the 18th, that's the one I'm really looking forward to, because it'll be our first look at the Rockets with the Wolves, and I'll be interested to see. Because the Wolves have played much better defensively now, it'd be interesting to see if that continues over the next couple games into that Houston game, and to see how they kind of match up with that high-flying D'Antoni three-pointers all over the place offense.
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting to see if you can, shoot enough free throws to keep up with them. I just want to see them beat, an Eastern Conference team. Not that it's going to matter head-to-head wise unless they meet in the finals. Like, it's largely irrelevant otherwise. But just like beat the Raptors one of two times. The Raptors are a very good team.
Yeah.
But you figure this team should be able to beat them once. I mean, probably not the game in Toronto when they second night of a back to back going from Atlanta to Toronto, because that sucks. But playing the Raptors at home on a day's rest, that should be their best chance there. And I think just a good one for the team to have under their belt, because that would be a very quality win as well.
Yeah, for sure. And. You look at the Orlando game next week too. Let's avoid the clunker in Orlando.
And at home against the Nets, and on the road in Atlanta.
Yeah.
I mean, realistically, they probably lose 4-ish games for the rest of the month.
Yeah. And that would put them, so you got 3, 6, 9, 10, 11. So they got 11 games. As of this taping, they got 11 games left. So they go 7-4. that would put them at 34-20. I mean, you're in a good spot. If you can,
I just don't think you beat the Blazers twice in a row, and you know, go out to Portland,
right,
and beat them, and then you play Golden State the next night. That's tough, and yeah. Golden State, mind you.
Yeah, that's always going to be a very difficult matchup. Speaking of them, by the way, how about them getting run out of their own gym by a, kind of a depleted Clippers team? Now, I know Steph and Clay, you know, Steph is kind of resting the ankle thing, and Clay, I think, just kind of sat out. And
Lou Williams had 50.
Yeah, Lou Williams has 50 points for a depleted Clippers team, and they, like, run the Warriors out of the gym. Like, the Warriors still had KD and Draymond, like... And a unbelievable winning culture. Like, they know how to play ball, and they just had a real
and their bench clunker is still at good.
Home. Yeah.
Yeah. But does that just guys. Like go to just reinforce our point that everyone plays weird ass games where they lose
yeah.
games they shouldn't, and they win games that they had no business winning? Like, and a regular night when both teams are healthy, you know, the Clippers aren't even healthy.
Right. Well, that's what I was telling people. Like, Blake Griffin has been out forever. They didn't even have Austin Rivers in that game either.
I don't know that Gallo's played for the Clippers yet.
He might has, have a little yeah, bit. I think he's only played like 10 games for them so far. But he's been injured, and when he's been in there, he has just not been good at all. So
those two things are probably related.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Again, thanks to everybody who submitted questions for us tonight. And that's going to put a bow on things here for us tonight. Thank you at home for listening. You can find the Raised by Wolves podcast at podcast1.com. You can find us on iTunes. Just search Raised by Wolves and give us a favorable rating. And, of course, you can find us at 1500ESPN.com as well. For Derek James, I am Manny Hill. Enjoy your Wolves basketball. Plenty more to talk about in the next few weeks as we go right through the month of January. Enjoy your Wolves ball, and we'll talk to you next week.